On 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Good morning, Melbourne. Welcome to the Science of Sport. Craig Harper, Mark Fabreo, Jackie Lauder every Sunday between 10 and 11. The place, the time, the space where we talk about all things health, wellness, sports, science, performance, put your teeth in, mindset, nutrition, all of that stuff. Cellular physiology when we let the professor out of his cage and everything else. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
You've already been up and about this morning and
You've done a gig.
You've enchanted and amused and motivated and inspired the masses. Can we ask where it was or was it top secret?
No, it's not top secret. The junior age state swimming championships are on over at MSAC this week.
And what did you do? Did you go, okay, kids, eyes to me?
No, I didn't talk to the swimmers this morning. This morning I did a session with the parents.
Mm.
Which I enjoy doing that. I think there's a lot of sports that don't actually include the parents the way they should. The parents are the ones that pay the bills and get the kids there. And the more we can educate them, I think the better messages they're going to relay on to the kids, which actually makes them better athletes.
Before we go to the good prof, three things that you think all parents should know, consider, keep in mind, parents of junior athletes.
Yeah, well, what I explained to them this morning was they need to understand the differences in development between boys and girls, where testosterone and estrogen come from different places in your brain. It's why boys will cope with certain things and girls will cope with other things. How your brain grows, how anxiety works, and mostly about balance. They must have balance. You don't need to be specializing in a sport until you're 14 or 15. Mm. So, you know, and I think the big thing for swimmers is the hours. So sleep.
And it's one of those sports, Professor, where we're seeing, Mark Fabreo, hello, we're seeing, you know, people who are at 10 years old, like with gymnastics and other sports, doing a lot of training.
Yes. swimming's one of the sports where I think parents make an incredible contribution and importance, because someone's got to drive the kids at 5 o'clock in the morning. And it is 5 o'clock in the morning.
Totally.
It's a big commitment, isn't it?
It is a big commitment. And the thing is, you know, the swimmers that swim into their mid-20s are incredibly resilient, because you're doing hard, pardon the pun, yards from the time you're 10.
Mm.
And it's a sacrifice. Swimming's a real, it's a big sacrifice as a sport. And I think parents, it's hard being, you know, I think about this when I watch my kids play basketball. It's hard being a parent of an athlete.
And if no one, and a lot of the parents have never been athletes themselves, so they really love being able to have sessions. Yesterday they did a session, I think they had a dietitian come in. They've got to be there anyway while the kids are warming up, so it's just a little sort of 45 to an hour session. They ask great questions, but they really enjoy just being educated a little bit and lap it up.
Yeah, and one of the things, you know, there's the ugly parent syndrome, but the other side,
2% of your parents, honestly, not even.
And the other side of the coin is, as a parent, you want to show interest in your child's progression in sport, but you don't want to overstep the mark and be the next coach. So it is difficult for parents. I think talking to the parents, Jackie, is terrific.
Mm.
And at the same time, of course, they are probably the single biggest influence in their kids' life.
Absolutely.
And want it or not, like it or not, they're going to talk to them about exercise and food and mindset and choices and life. So
why would we not educate them?
Exactly. So if they have a better understanding of nutrition and recovery and injury management and prevention and psychology and awareness and
they're a better support for the coach when they do that.
100%. And then if you've got the coach and the experts like you, the psychs and the exercise science people and the diet people and the parents on the same page, then hopefully we're all heading in the same direction.
Mm, but it's amazing the number of sports that just want the parents, you know, off the pool deck, which is fair enough, not on pool deck, but then just that's because they just don't want to see them or hear them. Coaches don't want to deal with them, and they don't always have the time to, but I think you must include them in your network because they're such a vital part. And if you're asking them for money, at the end of the day, the parent overrides the coach's decisions anyway.
It's funny because I used to do some coaching with kids, and you'd get these parents that they come to after every session. They're on the sideline. They're 4 feet from my ear. And they're like, they become somehow my assistant coach. I'm like, hey, listen, champ, I'm not sure when I appointed you, but bugger off. And then you get those that literally hardly even slow down and throw the kid out of the car because they see me as a babysitter for 3 hours.
And well, they go and get their Sunday morning coffee.
They shove the kid out and then accelerate it and come back at the – what's the latest I can come back to collect him? And they have zero interest. All they want to do is get rid of – and then you have those that are kind of in the middle that, you know, are probably in that 98% where, you know, they want the kids to do well, but they're not maniacs.
I love doing those sessions with the parents because they do. They just want to learn. So, yeah, so it was a good gig this morning.
What about you, big boy? What have you been up to?
Oh, you know, actually – bit of same, really. Just, you know what I've started doing, though?
Can you just tell our audience, Professor Mark Fabreo works in Sydney at the...
Garvan Institute of Medical
Research.
And
can you just give us a snapshot of what you're working on these days? Everyone knows I stand in front of audiences and talk to fat blokes, and we know Jackie works at Olympic Park Sport Med Centre, fixing and helping fix minds and performance.
Okay, so I'll just give you a little snapshot of what we're doing at the moment concerning exercise. So we've been able, science is really progressing, and we've been able now to, there are little vesicles that bleb out of your muscle called
what did you say, vesicles?
Vesicles, right. a little vesicle. Anyway, so they're called...
Oh, that cleared.
That totally cleared up. I'm on board, yeah.
Okay.
See, there's about 10 degrees in this room, Jackie, and none of us know what you're talking about.
Jackie, type exosome.
No,
into
don't.
Google.
No, it's terrible radio. Keep talking.
So anyway, so what we're doing now is we're identifying over 5,000 proteins in these exosomes, which are released from muscle. And we think that these exosomes go from the muscle to the liver to the adipose tissue, and they're like little taxis, and they cargo enormous numbers of proteins from one area of the body to another, and we're trying to work out how tissue-to-tissue communication takes place when you exercise. That's one of the things we're doing now, because to what end?
Like, so how does this relate to our listeners? Yeah. Like, what are we going to do with this?
Well, we just learn a little bit more about how the benefits of exercise, and then what we can try and do is come up with therapeutics that somehow mimic the benefit of exercise, because some people won't exercise or can't exercise. Mm. I mean, there are a lot of people who can't exercise for various reasons. Mm. But just there was a paper published recently saying that there are probably 14 diseases ranging from Alzheimer's disease to bladder cancer to diabetes where sedentary behaviour increases risk enormously. Mm. And the point of this for the listener is you don't have to go out and run a marathon. Mm. You just have to be not completely physically inactive. So walking the dog, getting off the tram two stops before work, all of those things add to reducing risk of all-cause mortality.
People take on too much, don't they? They think that I need to do something. And this time of year, we, you know, not going to talk about it, but New Year's resolutions and stuff, they go huge. Instead of just saying, just get up and walk or do incidental stuff, you know, park a little bit further away from the shopping centre and all those sort of things. It's actually not that hard to move a little more.
And change your language. Like, and this is going to sound funny coming from us and especially from me, but... Okay, take exercise out. If you don't want to exercise or you're not an exercise person, that's cool. People go to me, I'm not an exercise person. I go, well, you have a body, right? So let's just move more.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just move more because it's the same. They're interchangeable. You know, it's like if you're moving, forget exercise. Let's just have more activity, more movement, more energy expenditure.
Yeah.
You know, get your heart rate up a little bit. Move your arms and legs. Keep doing that. Do it on a regular basis. Whether or not you want to call it A, B, C or D doesn't matter because the results are the same. And as you said, it's like... I don't know where I heard this figure, and don't reference me on it, but I heard somewhere in a presentation that compared with two generations ago, we expend about 800 less calories per day.
Yes.
So it's not that we ingest a whole lot more energy, very little. I think it's only 5% or it's very similar.
We don't.
But we just move way less.
Yeah, but so, everything is remote control. And
exactly.
You know, and people can sit on their couch and clap their hands and the music starts.
Well, who wouldn't want to do that?
Do you know what I mean?
But I mean, so the whole gist of this is there's 24 hours in a day. And whether or not you go to the gym, and this is from a bloke who owned gyms for 25 years, it doesn't matter if you go to a gym or not. If you're going to, that's great because it's a good resource. But you can be super fit, super functional, super strong, super healthy, never going to a gym, never doing a class, but just moving your body the way it needs to be moved.
You know, a classic example of that is I live in Maroubra, and that's right on the beach.
Rugby Central.
And it's right on the beach, and it's the surfing mecca of the eastern suburbs. And the reason why I'm saying this is because there are surfers that walk past my place every day, and pretty much all these guys do is surf because they love it.
It's a full body workout, though, surfing so hard.
The rigs on these guys, they are lean, they are muscular, and they have, boys and girls, amazing physiques. And they don't go to the gym. Mm. They go and surf because they love it, and they're physically active in doing it. So find something you like and do it.
94291116. If you want to open a new conversation, feel free to do that. Anything in this space, 94291116, or if you want to send through a message, 0433981116. Jackie?
I've got a question for both of you. I was having a discussion with a parent this morning, actually. And it made me just think about things a little bit differently. But is there an activity that you as an adult now are doing that as a kid you would never have done? So one parent was telling me that because their kid swims, they've started swimming and they're like, I hated swimming as a kid.
Yeah.
And now they're swimming and they're like, oh, I really enjoy it.
Well,
So they put it in their head for years until their child was old enough.
Mm.
So I'm wondering with you guys, is there an activity or even our listeners that you're doing now that you would never have done as a kid?
Well, I'll start. The answer is yes and no. So this is, if you lift weights and you're between 20 and 40, listen to Uncle Harps because there's a lesson about to come. Because when I was young and stupid, as a lot of males are, full of testosterone, high testosterone, low IQ, low maturity, big ego, so perfect combination, perfect storm for injuries. So all of my training all of the time was hard and heavy, right? Mm. And now I'm so injured. Like, my muscles are fine, but all the other bits, ligaments, tendons, discs, spine, everything's like, all right, listen to me, don't do that anymore. So now, purely because I don't have an option, I've got to train quite light in the gym, which my ego hates.
Yeah,
right?
It would.
So I literally with, you know, some things I can lift as heavy as I used to, like my arms and things, but with like back movements, with leg movements, with a lot of shoulder stuff, I literally lift maybe a third to a half of the weight. But so I need to find a new way to create intensity and to create a level of overload so that I might at least maintain it. So I'm doing similar things, but in a totally different way to manage my rapidly deteriorating shell.
This is going to be almost like an echo because my thing that I'm doing now is precisely for the same reasons as Craig. When I was younger, thought I was bulletproof, didn't do any stretching, didn't do any torso strengthening work. I am now busted. So I'm now seeing Loretta Grace, Anzac Parade Physiotherapy, and she said to me, you have to make a deal with me. I will get you running again, but you have to do exactly what I say for an interim period. So now I'm doing planking. I'm doing stretching.
Planking.
You remember when I planked that time?
Yeah.
So I'm doing that. I'm doing stretching
all
the time. I'm doing my foam roller. I'm doing all of these things
that
I used to see people doing. And I used to see people doing these things and I used to say, oh, what a waste of time.
Mm.
But it's not. As you get older, you need to manage your body as a whole. And now I'm doing these things and I'm actually starting to enjoy it.
Our egos are fragile though.
Mm.
Like you said, you know, if you've grown up and you thought everything was power and intensity and then to be able to sit back now and go, oh, I was wrong, that's actually very hard to do. I think if you're a high achiever and you're someone who always pushed yourself and been disciplined, your ego takes just as long to change, I think, sometimes as the actual exercise itself.
Well, my training partner, Mark Lampard, shout out, 3 times Mr. Australia, this time a year ago, December a year ago, he jumped on a fit ball, which is very progressive for him, with two dumbbells, quite big dumbbells, laid back to do an incline press, completely destroyed his shoulder, had to have a shoulder reco.
Oh, wow.
Tore his supraspinatus off and detached his bicep. So
he did a good job. He was thorough.
So he's just now getting back to where he was. But we both of us train with a young guy called Jai, who's 22. Very good potential. We help him out. He's, you know, training for a few things, but he's got this perfect young body with perfect joints and perfect spine and perfect and. But he kills himself, and we, the big old dinosaurs, we're in the gym going, listen, champ. I know that you want to deadlift a Hyundai. Please don't. These are the reasons why. He's like, nah, I'm good. I feel good. I'm like, yep, you're 22. That's why you feel awesome.
But don't you think feeling good, I think, is a trap for a lot of people? Because, and I deal with a lot of people that have chronic fatigue, and there's, you know, the post-viral way of becoming in that chronic fatigue state, but there's also pushing yourself where you've just completely exhausted yourself and your body has shut down.
I need someone to come to my house and stretch me and do one-on-one yoga with me. If you've got heaps of spare time and you're awesome and you want me to review you.
But see, this is the thing about being a professional athlete.
As
distinct from being an amateur. Because when you're an amateur, you've got to work, right? When you're
you mean have a job?
Yes, you need a job. When you're a professional athlete, you can do those things where you have a masseur coming over. You have a physical therapist who will stretch.
It depends what sort of professional athlete, because a lot of our Olympians have to have some sort of job.
Yeah, sure. But have you seen the Serena Williams documentary?
No.
It's called Serena. And it goes through her rehab is more than 50% of her day.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Because she's such a power athlete.
Oh, she's amazing.
I would think she would be getting injured on a regular basis because she generates so much. 9429 1116 if you wouldn't jump on the line or during this break. So here's what we want to know. What's the one thing that you're not doing for your health? It might be an exercise thing, a lifestyle thing. It might be a food thing. It might be a stress management thing. What's the one thing that you're not doing that you should do? And we might coach you through it. And we, in the studio, will each come up with one thing that we should be doing for our health that we're not.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Larder and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. Can we almost say Happy Christmas? Can we?
Yeah, next week we can.
Festive whatever.
Well,
I've been saying it.
Season.
It's been a bit of Happy Christmas going, Merry Christmas going on the on the station. I think a little bit of that. Now, just quickly, 9429 1116, if there's something that you need to be including in your health, fitness, getting better, more functional regime, is there something that you're avoiding? That's our question. What's the thing that you're avoiding? Could be a food thing, a fitness thing, lifting weights thing, a stress management thing, a lifestyle thing. What's the thing you're avoiding? Give us a buzz and we will coach you through it. Well, we've got Australia's best psychologist, as voted by me, Jackie Louder, here. Free of charge, FOC, best price ever. Professor Mark Fabreo, IQ of 714. Just talks a lot. We don't know what he's talking about, but he's super smart. He's here as well. No, we do know what you're talking about, mate. Mostly, except when you tell Jackie to Google things in the middle of the show. Let's go to Jake in Lower Plenty. Good morning, Jake. Thanks for joining us.
No worries, guys.
Off you go.
Just when you were talking about the injuries, I've just recently been for a week. I was pushing pretty hard on the leg press, and I think I just overdid it. Didn't warm up or anything, and my knee just flared up on my joint. So it's around the cartilage area, and so for the rest of the week, just been rehabbing in the pool and stuff, and it's just come good.
Where's the today. Is the pain above your kneecap or below your kneecap or like inside your knee?
That's sort of to the side where like the ligaments are on the left side.
On the left side.
So is it medial or lateral? Is it on the inside of your knee or the outside of your knee?
Inside.
Yeah, you've pinched a medial meniscus by the sound of things.
Listen to you. Mm. So you got to, I mean, that's not super uncommon.
No.
And it's not life-threatening, so, but neither of us are medical doctors, let's add that. But, yeah, you just got to warm up. And the thing with leg press too, Jake, is one thing that a lot of people do wrong is they go too deep, too fast, and they bounce out of the bottom of the movement. So with leg press, come down to around 90 degrees at the knee, and at the bottom of the movement, which virtually nobody does, stop. Stop at the bottom of the movement, count one or two, and then bring the weight back up. So you're not just dropping. So the bringing it down, which is called the eccentric phase of the movement, that's just as important as the other bit, the concentric phase. So come down real slow, come down 5 or 6 seconds, pause at the bottom of the movement, and then explode up in 1 or 2 seconds if you want. But pause at the bottom and reasonably light weights just to get you going. Thanks for your call. All right, so a couple of things that I need to change, Professor Mark Fabreau and Jackie Lauder. Jackie, one, I need to prep food. I'm super lazy because I'm a single alpha male.
Okay.
And because I live in a very high density of restaurants and cafes.
You do, yeah.
So I can walk 100 metres to 5 restaurants and get a pretty good dinner for $15 or $12.
Are you talking just about dinner, though?
But everything.
Because I'm
lazy. I don't eat bad food. I'm just lazy.
Right,
like, okay. I need to go out and buy a couple of kilos of whatever, cook it up, throw in some veggies, make 7 meals, put it in the freezer.
Yep.
Because I guess that's not a money thing, but I probably don't eat as well as I should, even though it's probably better than most. So for me, organisation, food preparation is one. Mark?
Mine's pretty obvious. I really like wine and... alcohol's not great for you, so I try and limit my alcohol intake. I don't drink anything but wine. Like, I don't drink beer. I was out last night with a few lads and I just didn't have any beer. But I like wine, and it then comes down to, well, should you have some pleasures in life?
Yeah, you
I
should.
Don't drink during the week, but alcohol's not good for you, so I probably should drink less, but I really like my wine.
I'm struggling. I'm waiting for inspiration.
Alcohol's
from somebody.
Not. I mean, alcohol within reason is. It's
no,
like.
Well, not really, Craig.
A glass of wine is fine, and this is coming from
true.
A teetotaler.
True, true.
But a glass of wine every day is fine.
Yeah, I don't drink during the week. I don't. I find it disrupts my sleep.
How often in a year, Mark Fabreau? Be honest. Be real. How often in a year would you get a little bit
tipsy?
More than I'd like.
Once a month?
Yeah, probably twice
a month?
Probably a couple of times a month.
Yeah.
You're talking also to two complete non-drinkers.
I know. And look, this is the thing. Everything else, like when it comes to preparing food, like what Craig said, I'm so good at that. I've cooked for myself.
We should maybe live together.
Yeah,
maybe.
Oh, no, that's
that
not
would
a good
not.
Idea.
You know what? That'd be like they could start that show, the odd couple again.
That's right. I would definitely be Felix. You're Felix.
I'm Felix.
I'm definitely
you're
Oscar.
You're Oscar.
That's you would totally both end up in my office for issues that don't already exist. They would bring them out.
We're talking about getting back in shape, and we're talking about addressing that one part of our fitness or health regime that we're neglecting. Let's go to Janine in Flemington. Thanks for joining us, Janine.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I have been a very fit person, and in the last 6 months I've had to have a couple of surgeries and radiation treatment, and I'm exhausted and back at work and just really finding it hard to get back into what I was doing was yoga and walking, and that kept me really lean and fit, and I'm just exhausted now. I find it hard to get to a yoga session.
Mm. Well, hands are going up everywhere in the studio. Everyone's got advice for you. We'll start with Mark.
Janine, my advice for what it's worth is to really listen to your body and don't worry about the exercise until you're not exhausted. Mm. Right now, your body is healing. You've been through trauma, and if you try and exercise when you're exhausted, you're probably going to get into an area where exercise could be more detrimental than beneficial. Really listen to your body, and when your body will tell you when you're ready. Don't be so hard on yourself.
And the sleep thing is with food, I'd say.
Yeah, sleep, food, hydration, looking after your mind, manage your mind to manage your body. And, you know, if anything, Janine, gentle exercise. But, yeah, it's hard too when you've got a default. When your default setting is go, 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 go. Mm. And you've got this, you know, your normal operating system is I exercise, I move, I'm dynamic, I'm high energy. There's a fair bit of adjusting. Thanks for your call, Janine, and look after you.
I think that's when people have treatments like radiation or chemo or whatever, you don't know. Very few of us spend time with our bodies in absolute extremes. So you don't know the depths of what your body can or can't cope with until you put into, unfortunately, some of those situations, which is why you do need to listen to it, because it's actually giving you brand new information that you've never had before.
Sorry about that. I actually just turned that so I could read a couple of things. Now, just quickly, we'll just whip through a couple of these SMSs. If you've got a question but you're a big scaredy cat and you don't want to talk on the wireless, then 0433981116. I'll say that slower. 0433981116. Do I need to lift weights for my health to gain muscle mass? We don't know where you're at right now. I don't know how much muscle you have, but I'll answer the do I need to lift weights to gain muscle? Well, you need to probably do some resistance training. So whether or not that's lifting weights or whether or not that's rock climbing or it's body weight training or it's circuit training, but you're not going to accidentally gain muscle unless you're a 14-year-old, but I'm assuming you're an adult. So if you want to put on muscle, yes, lifting some weights is good. Doesn't need to be 25 days a week. 3 days a week is plenty. 30 to 45 minutes is enough if you're just trying to get somewhere to create some momentum and build a little bit of muscle. Do you agree, Professor?
I do.
Physiologist?
Yes, I do. And the other thing is that resistance exercise becomes increasingly important as we age.
It does.
Because frailty, if we're frail, and frail meaning we have low muscle mass in our elderly years, we're actually the response to an illness or an injury is much worse. So as you get older, you'll never maintain muscle mass. But if you can monitor you're different. but if you can delay the decline in mass, it's really important for your general health.
It's called sarcopenia.
Correct.
And it's one of the
Google that.
I'm going to Google your face in the ad. Sarcopenia is essentially muscle wasting in the elderly, and it's one of the things that people don't consider enough in terms of maximizing and maintaining health. So,
do you use big words?
I explained what it is.
You're trying to keep up.
I explained what it's.
Sitting here Googling. That's all I'm doing.
You just. All right. Now, hi, guys. Love the show. Great insight on all things exercise. Just touching on ego. It's one of the hardest things to get changed. Took me 2 years to change my thinking in the gym. I was 200 pounds. Thinking bigger was better, but now I'm 180 and I feel fantastic. I'm 42 years of age. And I would say, Mr. I'm assuming you're a Mr. I'd say, Mr. 180, you're probably just as strong at 180, which means you've lost some schmaltz and maintained some strength. And you've got a better power to weight. And less, to a point, less weight is better. So I weigh 90. I'd say you weigh about 70, mate. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm 73.
73. And overall, I hate to say it. No, I don't really hate to say it because it's true. But to a point, lighter is better. Lighter is better. People who are lighter, and you've got to remember, muscle is only valuable to the point that it's functional. Beyond that, it's ego.
Yeah. But I mean,
isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Like if you... There's very little value in massive pecs and delts and triceps. They're
unless you're in competition.
Yes. But what I'm saying, just for health and function, all you need is muscles that work and that are relatively strong and functional for what you need. Beyond that, there's no value.
And you need balance in your muscles as well.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. A lot of people who train in the gym have got really strong bits and really weak bits.
Toffee apples.
And then they go and pick up a carton of milk from the floor.
And they screw it up. Just following on from Janine's call before, I'm an oncology nurse. For Janine, exercise, particularly with yoga, is proven scientifically to improve cancer-related fatigue. So listen to your body, but try to exercise, from Lorraine. So that's good. She's an oncology nurse. That's
there was
good
also
advice.
A thing, a friend of mine, whose name is Robin Vincent, she's actually working with... one of the hospitals. I'm helping out. I'm cheering them on and giving some support. A thing called Strength Over Cancer. Now, there was a documentary. It was on the ABC. I think it was Compass, which spoke about the value of doing some strength training for people even undergoing chemo, which almost seems counterintuitive and contradictory.
It was Catalyst.
Catalyst. Thank
and
you.
And we are now doing a trial at the Garvan.
Great.
Where we have, because we've shown that a protein gets released from muscle that is protective against breast cancer.
Yeah, what's that called?
The protein's called Decrin. We've discovered it in a screen. And what it does, it can get into a tumour, and it's a what's called an extracellular matrix protein. So it stiffens the tumour, and the tumour is less likely to metastasise. So together with a clinical oncologist, we're doing a trial now where we're taking women, and on the day of their chemo, they go straight to the exercise room.
Awesome.
And this has been pioneered by a group in Denmark, and we're collaborating with them. There's another group in Perth that have shown very clearly that exercise is really good for prostate cancer, because in prostate cancer you lose bone density. So the exercise as medicine for cancer is going to be increasingly important in the next 10 years.
That changes mindset too, doesn't it? Because I think in the past we've always just assumed, as they did originally when people started getting chronic fatigue, and they thought, oh, I've just got to rest, and we go, no, you've got to move. So it's really challenging old beliefs where people say, well, if you've had chemo or all these other things, you must just lay there and rest and be sedentary. So it's nice to hear that being challenged.
In the 60s, there was this Dallas bed rest study that was transformative, because believe it or not, in the 60s, when somebody had a heart attack, they were told to do nothing. And this Dallas bed rest study by Professor Beng Soltin, bless his heart, he transformed medicine in terms of cardiovascular medicine. Right. We're now told if you have a heart attack, the best thing you can do in your rehab is to be physically active. The same thing for cancer, I believe.
It's a lot of things being turned on their head. I even remember 15, 20 years ago, I stuffed my back and the advice was do nothing.
Yeah.
And now it's the opposite. Yeah. Now it's do something. We've got to go to a break, but Chris in St Albans, you hang around, champion, because you're first cab off the rank on the other side of this.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo. So good,
I got you. Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport, the science of sport, every Sunday between 10 and 11, coming up after 11 o'clock. BP, Paul Aitken, and Sean Manawira will be here with a first serve. And between midday and 6, BP steering the Sports Central ship. Let's go to Chris in St Albans, who's been patiently waiting. Thanks for waiting, Chris.
Yes, hi. Just after some advice on osteitis pubis. Had it for 4 months, still got it. Tried pretty much everything, dry needling, three courses of anti-inflams. Just tried to run again, just pulling up sore the next day. And it moves from one side to another, just out of ideas on what to do next.
Who's been, I don't mean what's their name, but who's been treating you? A physio or a doctor, a sports doctor or?
Osteo.
An osteo.
Yeah.
Have you had any scans done or anything to see what's happening in terms of the muscle and what's going on?
So I had scans to the hip. It's all clear. No arthritis or anything like that. So.
So Chris, what brought it on? Was it running?
I think so, but there was no particular incident. It just lots of running and that, and just one day I just pulled up sore and just, struggling to get back on the track.
Have you tried other activities?
Yeah, that's what
like,
I was
like, rather than going back to what you were
bike
doing?
Bike riding, yes. I've tried some bike riding.
Pool?
Yes. So does the bike riding aggravate it?
No, it doesn't actually.
Well, that's what you should continue to do. And don't, unfortunately, osteitis pubis can take a long time. So what you need to do is avoid any of the activities that flare it up. And which be patient.
Yeah, I know. It's a hard one. Sorry we don't have better news for you, Chris. But just to clear it up for people, so osteitis pubis is essentially an inflammatory kind of thing happening up high in the groin,
yes,
in the adductor muscles, yes, normally, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, where they come up into the pelvis. Let's go to Brian in Chelsea Heights, who's also been patient. Thanks for waiting, Brian.
Hi. Look, I just wanted to make the point, as I said to the young lady on the switch, I've had 13 heart procedures and 2 knee replacements. Mm. The thing with rehab is you've got to push yourself to a certain extent, because if you don't, you'll use, as you say, listen to your body as an excuse to do nothing.
Mm.
Now, I have real problems with motivation to get going now, but I make the effort each day, even though it's, it is really an effort because of, the position I'm in. But I stress that you can use the rehab as an excuse to not do the right thing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Look, can I be really rude and ask how old you are, Brian?
I'm 74.
Well, mate, you're amazing. The fact that you're still doing your rehab and still moving your body after all those procedures, and you sound sharp as a tack. Good on you. Thanks for your call, mate. Thanks for your contribution. Let's go to Rod in Mentone, who wants to talk hamstring tendons, I think. Morning, Rod.
Yeah, g'day. How are you going?
Good. Awesome.
I've got hamstring tendinopathy, and I was just wondering if you've got any sort of advice or whatever on that.
So is the tendinopathy high in your buttock?
Yes. Yeah,
right. So what you've got is what we refer to as runner's bum.
Quick, jot that sciencey down.
And I can pretty much attest to this because I have it chronically. One thing that you've really got to do, it's likely, Rod, that although I can't say this without, you seeing a doctor, but it's likely that what happens with hamstring tendinopathies is that if you have problems with your lower back, your buttock muscle doesn't engage when it should, and you put undue stress on your hamstring, and therefore you get chronic hamstring tendinitis. So you really have to address the origin of the problem, which is likely to be your lower back.
And the glutes as well?
Yeah, but see, your glutes aren't engaging if you have a lower back problem. So my advice would be to see a sports doctor or very good physio to make sure you get to the heart of the problem, because it's unlikely to be a hamstring injury per se. And if you don't address the origin, you'll never get rid of it.
Thanks for your call, Rod. See, that's why we've got you here, for all those clever ones. It's 10 minutes to 11, listening to The Science of Sport. Jackie Lauder, Craig Harper, Professor Mark Fabreo. Last break. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lauder and Mark Fabreo. So
good, I got you. Good morning, boys and girls. Hope you're having a good Sunday morning. Hope you're enjoying the dulcet tones of Mark Fabreo, Jackie Lauder and me, Craig Harper. Just bring sciencey stuff. It's what we do. It's what we do on Sundays. It's how we roll. A couple of questions on the SMSery. One for moi. Hi, Craig. I've signed up to test a product. I won't say the name of that product, champ, because I don't want to give them any airtime. Called, do you know anything about that? Well, Brownie, I don't. I'd never heard of it till you sent me that message. Jackie, my researcher, my head of research, researched it for me during the break, read me out the stuff. I don't know anything about it. But to be 100% honest, 35 years I've been in the fitness industry, and for 35 years I've been hearing about breakthrough products on a kind of a weekly basis, something revolutionary, something amazing, cellular nutrition, something that it's going to boost anabolic response in the body, and something that's... So I don't know, but I would think it's probably not the groundbreaking thing that it might purports to be. Having said that, haven't used it. Always the best way with these things is do a little trial on yourself. Keep everything else similar, everything else constant, and use that product if you want to use that product for 6 or 8 weeks and see what happens, and then you're doing your own little science research project on you.
Mark, question for you. Can you comment on caffeine consumption and exercise? Is it best to consume caffeine before exercising?
So caffeine can work. It's a stimulant. And so therefore, if you take it's proven.
Can I just ask, can work to do what?
To improve performance in endurance, particularly. Because it's a stimulant. I actually think it should be banned by WADA. Jackie, you told me that at high levels it is.
Yeah, there's a certain level of caffeine that once it's in your system at that level, then it's now illegal.
But in sort of middle distance repeat efforts, we know that perhaps some team sports use it. It's because it works. So if you take it before, just make sure you don't take too much of it. I don't know the amounts that are banned, but it is effective.
A lot of people will have a coffee before they go and exercise because it raises their heart rate, particularly if they're trying to lose weight. This is their reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
Is that if their heart rate goes up quicker, then they go for a run, it'll help them get into that fat burning quicker.
There's I used to train with a guy who used to drink black coffee, a thermos of black coffee, so he wouldn't drink water. He would literally bring a litre of black coffee. Sweating like a beast, sweating like a sweaty pig.
I'm not in the gym with him.
Oh yeah, and he just smelled a treat. So BO and caffeine combo, just awesome. Jackie, question for you. The question is, how do I find joy when I have chronic fatigue syndrome and am really restricted with what exercise I can do at the moment? This is the last part of my recovery, learning how to not view resting as punishment and boring.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, don't necessarily have to particularly look for joy. What you need to look for is purpose. So if you understand that you're having to rest for a purpose so that you can recover to do your next exercise session, then that's what I'd be looking for more than anything else. And it's just great at exercise programs. You will get there. Make sure your sleep is good quality. Don't overdo it. But yeah, find a purpose for it and it makes it a little easier.
I think you're right there that sometimes the process or the journey is kind of sucks, right?
Yeah, totally.
But we don't like that because we're an instant gratification culture.
Yeah.
We love joy and we want results now, and that's no disrespect at all to whoever our SMSer was. But yeah, I think sometimes you just go, look, this is going to suck for a while, which is not what I want, but the outcome will be what I want. And so it's just batten down the hatches and just keep going. And that's the same with, even when you give up, like I was talking to a mate of mine recently who gave up sugar 2 weeks ago, and for the first week he wanted to kill himself because he's just had mountains of sugar for 30 years. And he said, I felt like I was coming off, I don't know, he doesn't use drugs, but I felt like I was coming off heroin or something, where he couldn't sleep, he was grumpy, his mind didn't work, he was sweaty, he was irrational. And it took him nearly a week to kind of get down from whatever he must have been experiencing.
Consuming a lot of sugar.
He was. He drank soft drink all the time, had hot drinks with sugar all the time, junk food all the time.
This is what addiction is, though.
Forever. And then so if you have 30 years of high sugar content, then you could take anything out of a diet if you've been, whatever it is. If you've been having that for 30 years, your body's going to go, not a chance.
The quicker something works, and this is where an addiction comes from, the quicker it works, the higher the addictive value. Mm. So when you've all of a sudden stopped it and gone cold turkey especially, your body is going to start to question you.
He's a smart dude, and he's like, honest to God, I almost got up in the middle of the night and went to 7-Eleven while my wife was sleeping to just inhale some sugar because he couldn't even sleep well.
So getting on the soft drink issue, if there's one thing that people could do that will change their dietary habits enormously, and that is if you drink sugary drinks, try stopping. Sugary drinks, soft drink, is one of the major contributors, if not the biggest contributor to the obesity epidemic.
Well, here's even a step up from that, but along those lines, try to go for 1 week drinking no calories, right? So 1 week of water or perhaps herbal tea, but nothing with sugar, nothing with calories. And obviously, so you're taking out, you know, alcohol, you're taking out sugar, you're taking out artificially sweetened drinks, which, by the way, still create an insulin response. and are probably worse for you in some ways than
they are. They sugar. Really alter the microbiota and in a very negative way, your microbiome, your gut bacteria. Mm. So diet, drinks, do that.
Jackie, it's been real.
See you next week.
Next week is our last one just before Christmas.
For a couple of weeks.
Are you here next week?
No. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thanks, champion. Coming up after 11 BP, thanks to Jackie, our producer, Mikey, our panel operator. See you next week.